This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 73. Good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is, folks. It's a show. We focus on everything to do with fantasy books and fantasy authors. And I mean everything. I mean, we talk about epic fantasy, urban fantasy. I have people who've written swords and sorcery and other types of fantasy stories all here on the show. So you can expect to find the best and brightest authors from all those corners of the fantasy book world when you tune into the podcast here on each episode. As always, I like to start off the episode each time with my own author update. I just released Cyber's Underground last week, the third book in the Sapiens Run trilogy. You know, I have to say it's always a little bittersweet when I wrap up not just a book, but an entire series like this, because, you know, I kind of feel like I'm saying goodbye to somebody I've come to know pretty well. But it has to happen. And I'd always planned this to be a trilogy, so I may revisit maybe in a short story format these characters. But in the meantime, you can catch all three books, starting with Cyber's Change, then Cyber's Escape, and wrapping up with the newly released Cyber's Underground. I urge you to check it out. It's a dystopian, near future, cyberpunky kind of thing. And I think if you like that kind of thing, you might enjoy it. As always, I always am working on another project, and I've got other things going on. Right now, I'm working on the eighth book in my Extreme Medical Services Supernatural Paramedic series. And also, I'm working on a nonfiction book for authors to help them get some information and figure out what they need to do to create audiobooks from their current books. So both are scheduled to release in the next few months, definitely by early 2020. And you can look forward to that, whether you're looking to read another book in my Extreme Medical series, or if you are looking for things as an author, they'll be available soon. As always, you can check out more information on what I'm up to by visiting my fan group on Facebook. It's called Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers, and we talk about not just my books, but everybody's favorite books. And I have a lot of other author friends that drop by there and share special offers, free stuff, and we all talk about our favorite fantasy books there. So I look forward to you catching up with me there. Just search for Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers and join the group. I'd love to have you in there with me. Also, you can find more on my website and blog at jamiedavisbooks.com. However you want to reach out to me, you can definitely do that. On today's show, we are interviewing H. Claire Taylor, and I'm so excited. I know Claire. I've met her at conferences and gotten to know her a little bit over time. She lives in Austin, Texas, and writes humorous fiction under three, and she says soon to be four pen names. She writes a lot of books, folks. She's really good. It includes satire, paranormal police procedural, and paranormal cozy mystery. She also does story consulting with authors on the side. She's been a full-time indie author since 2015 and never plans to retire. She's an avid reader. This is her second year in a row doing the 100 Book Reading Challenge. And man, is that impressive, because I know how many books she turns out writing-wise. She's also finding time to do all that reading too. And she enjoys all genres as long as the story is compelling. She's been reading a lot about cosmology and quantum physics lately, which, boy, that's some deep stuff, as well as, interestingly enough, serial killer fiction, which I think is hilarious. We talk about her awesome and funny Jessica Christ series. Now, if it sounds like it's a little sacrilegious, it might be for some people, but I just love it. It's hilarious and really entertaining, about the daughter of God if she was born and raised in West Texas. Check out my fun and entertaining chat with Claire coming right up. Hi, Claire. I want to welcome you to the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. It's really great to have you on the show today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Jamie.
So why don't you introduce yourself to our audience? I know some of them probably know who you are, but for those that don't, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, let's see. My actual name is Claire Taylor. I write under a few pen names. Most I guess, notably as H. Claire Taylor. I also have Brock Bloodworth is another name I write under, and I have a few others. So, you know, I just love writing. That's what I do. I write across genres because I get easily bored. And all of it kind of is comedic in some way or another, because I guess I just can't really repress the snark. But yeah, that's it. I live in Austin. I'm a Texas gal. So I don't know if that's super representative of who I am. But, you know.
Well, and it's interesting because I can see, you know, you write about Texas. In the Jessica Christ series, at least, you write about Texas and represent, I think, very well where you live.
Yeah, I have never lived outside. Well, I went to school about 40 minutes south of Austin, but I've lived my whole life in Austin. So I'm not like a country Texas girl, but I feel like I dated enough country Texas boys to know what that life is like.
That's great. What got you started writing? Is this something you've always wanted to do, or is this something you kind of fell into at some point in your life?
No, I always enjoyed it. I'm one of those people that kind of annoyingly always knew this is what I wanted to do. There wasn't like a, oh, but you know, I got to find my purpose. I pretty much knew this is what I wanted to do. It was a matter of figuring out how I could do it feasibly. So, I mean, I started writing when I was like 10 and could figure out how to type. And so I started writing stupid screenplays and that sort of thing. And I had a little writing club with some of my friends. And then I went to school for it. I was actually thinking of doing math in college. So I'm glad I didn't do that. I still enjoy math, but I went and got my English degree with an emphasis in creative writing at Texas State, which you will see in book 4 of the Jessica Christ series. I lovingly roast the university. But I studied it, and then after 4 years of my professors telling me there was no way to make a living as a writer, I went ahead and went into teaching for a little bit, education. Then I edited for a while and realized that I was just kind of, you know, dancing around what I actually wanted to do. And so I eventually left. I was working at a charter school and doing administration stuff, and I took the plunge and have been writing full time for about 4 years now.
That's awesome. And I love the Jessica Christ series. My wife and I actually, she's ahead of me on it, which kind of annoys me because she lets hints drop. But it is one of the most unique premises for a series and just so enjoyable. Why don't you tell us a little bit, just the nutshell version of what Jessica Christ series is about?
Yeah, so it is the story of God's daughter born in West Texas. And it follows, you know, the opening scene is her nativity story. Obviously, she's not very cognizant for it. She's either not born yet or being born. So it sort of opens with the messenger of God, a man named Jimmy Dean, who is kind of a lifetime con man shyster. And he is sent to deliver the message that the baby being born in the double wide is God's daughter. So it starts there, and then you kind of follow her life throughout the series as she has to deal with, you know, the normal woes of growing up female in sort of small town environment, and her overbearing father and her mother, you know, has a reputation around town. So it's just sort of a growing up, coming of age story, really. And, yes, it has obviously has a religious bent. I don't try and offend anyone in it. I know some people are offended and they let me know about it, but I kind of wanted to scare people off with the title. So if like the title alone is offensive to you, you're not going to like what's in the book. But it's kind of a religious satire, but I think it's more of just like a general satire.
I agree with that, actually. I think It's not as offensive as you might think it is based upon hearing the premise, I guess is what I would say. Is that, do you think that's fair?
Can I use that as a blurb?
Yeah, you certainly can. Not as offensive as it looks like. I mean that in the kindest possible sense, because I'd laugh out loud when I read these books. And it is, And it is because I think of the fact that it's satirical and you know, and I'm a practicing Christian and happy to be one. And I find so much funny in this and so many things that just, you know, don't make me question anything. I've always wondered what Jesus's life was like growing up before he, you know, entered his ministry stage, because he was an ordinary everyday kid. I mean, he freaking ran away when he was 12.
Yeah, there was some teen angst in that for sure.
Yeah, and he even has a snarky answer to his parents when they catch up to him in the synagogue. I mean, I heard that story recited in church when my kids were about that age, and I looked at my wife and I said, "That sounds like," and I said, "my oldest," and she started laughing. We were laughing in the middle of the sermon at church. It was not good.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that humor and religion are incompatible at all. And like you said, I mean, I have a lot of readers who are practicing Christians, a lot of Catholic readers, all kinds, you know. So, and I have atheist readers and I have agnostic readers and all kinds. So I don't think that there's, you know, that's kind of what I was aiming for, just that we can all kind of laugh at the human condition together.
Yeah, you hit it right on the mark, and it's so much fun. I mean, all the things, you know, from the way she has to, like, you know, have her miracles and that they can't be the same as her brothers and, you know, those kind of things. Just a nice touch to, like, and the fact that, you know, her parents, you know, her mother's a single mother with an absentee father, essentially, right? So,
right. Can never get the child support. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just wonderful. So I wonder if, you know, is this the first series you wrote, or is this something you came into after you'd written some other things?
No, this is the first series I wrote. I had written some other books, like standalone books, because, you know, I had to get the sort of lit fic bug out of my system post-college. I thought that was the only thing that people were supposed to write. There's a lot of frowning upon genre fiction in, you know, the English departments of the country. But so I did those and they were okay. But then I realized, yeah, like I intended this to be one book, Jessica Christ. And quickly realized, no, this is not one book. So I realized that about halfway through what is now book two, that it was going to have to be a series. So the first edition of the first book kind of fell flat at the ending because it wasn't intended to be a complete arc, right? So I actually went back a couple years ago and redid the ending of the first one, just tweaked it a little bit, kind of gave it a little bit more of a closure, really hit the you know, end point a little bit harder, and then, you know, continued on with the series, which I think is the most, I guess, time efficient way of kind of revamping a series, is to just really go back and strengthen book one. Because once people are past book one, you've got them, right? So yeah, I did that. And I didn't mean for it to be a series, but it is now. And I just keep on writing it. So yeah, this is the first one.
Yeah, it's great. And I've actually done the same thing with my first series. It's gone back and tweaked the first couple of books actually to make them fit a little bit better into what I now know is a better way to grab the reader and show them a good first time in the book and then they move forward. And, you know, it made a difference right away. So I think it's important. And that's one of the things you can do as an indie author, right? I mean, if you were traditionally published, you could never go back and say, "Oh, I want to fix book one." And they'd be like, "No."
Oh, yeah, I know. My inner critic was very much like, "You can't do that, Claire. That's unheard of." And I'm like, I can do whatever I want, right? Like, it's, you know, if you have good conversion from like 2 to 3, 3 to 4 and so on, then if you can increase your conversion from 1 to 2 by, say, 10% just by doing some tweaks, you're golden. Like, you've just made yourself so much more money over the long term.
I mean, it would be like, I mean, yeah, for some people, that's like saying, "Oh, well, Da Vinci is going to go back and fix Mona Lisa's smile because it's not exactly the way he wanted it." Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get her some teeth whitening and stuff.
Yeah. Right. It's just not the thing. I mean, but we can do that. And I think that it makes readers happy. And, you know, I actually put some extra stuff in there and encouraged my existing readers to, you know, force the new download, you know, like ask for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to do the same. Amazon is very resistant to that. But yeah, I put in like an extra chapter and and tweaked some stuff. And I actually made the chapters shorter just because I kind of changed the placement of the chapters because I was not very smart about my chapter hooks. And so I wanted to make sure people were getting through the first book and not stopping at a chapter and forgetting about it. So, I mean, it's just stuff that you learn. And I think that readers don't necessarily know when they pick up book one. They aren't necessarily forgiving of like, well, this is the first in the series. They're just trying to get to know the characters. You know, they're feeling their way through. It's like they want the first one to be good. So you might as well just go back once you have more wisdom and make it better.
So you mentioned earlier that you got some negative feedback. How have you dealt with that? Is that something that's bothered you a whole lot or that you've tried to respond to?
No, I don't really mind the negative feedback. I don't know if it's just that I'm a personality that I tend to blurt out what I'm thinking, and so I'm used to negative feedback, but most of the times it's so incoherent that it's laughable to me. Or people like throwing Bible verses at me doesn't really bother me because, you know, anyone can pull something out of context and hurl it at me, and I feel like I'm doing a good thing here. I mean, I actually thought up this whole plot when I was teaching, and you know, it came from kind of a place of seeing some of my female students limit themselves because of certain oppressive religious beliefs. And you know, female students that I was like, why would you do this? You have so much potential. So for me, it's kind of, there's the feminist sort of, you know, passion behind it of like, we shouldn't be limiting a specific gender. It just seems silly to me. But so that kind of thing, you know, that passion behind it makes me a little bit more, resistant to the criticism. But when I do get a lot of drive-by one-star reviews, and the ones, you know, that are really good, I'll post them on my Facebook page.
Yeah, the badge of honor, right? I love when I see, especially new writers, they'll say, oh my gosh, I got this one-star review and it has nothing to do with my book. And you know, I always had the same comment. You know, I said, it's a badge of honor. No one trolls unsuccessful authors. So,
right. Yeah, and it's funny. And they're always, you know, incoherent with rage and they've, you know, hit the caps lock and they're ready to rock and roll. And it's ridiculous. It's like, okay, there are other books out there. Like if you need this rage to, you know, get you out of bed in the morning, fine, but it doesn't bother me. And it's not like it's hurting my reviews, like my star rating. Like I have good ratings anyway, so.
Yeah, definitely. Now you sent something to me in the little questionnaire that I sent you to fill out, and it made me kind of sad. The seventh and last book in this series is coming out in July 2020. I got a little tear going down my cheek right now. How do you feel about that? Because I mean, as an author, these things kind of become our babies.
They do. And, you know, it has to have an end, right? I think all good things come to an end. And I mostly just want to be done with this series. I mean, it's a lot of pressure. Like, I think that's most of, for me, it feels like I've really written myself into a tight spot. Because a lot has to happen. And I know what's going to happen. But it's a matter of like, how do I make this last book hilarious? And I haven't been feeling especially hilarious lately. Yeah, I want it to be really good. I need it all to kind of come full circle, right? Like it all has to wrap up nicely. I don't want to ride this one into the sunset. I have some series that I'm happy to ride into the sunset, right? Just straight into the ground, whatever. Once it stops selling, I'll stop writing. But this one does have more of like a personal sort of meaning to me. So I want it to end on a high note. I want it to be strong and memorable. And I'll probably write more stuff about these characters afterwards. I just need this main story arc to be wrapped up.
Yeah, I actually did something similar to my first series, and because I just had to finish it. I had that feeling like, you know, I needed to just get it closed out. So if I never wrote in there again, it wouldn't feel like people had been left hanging. And then The minute I finished the book, like I'm literally a week later, I got a great idea for the next book. I was like, okay. So I actually started writing that. I'm actually writing that right now. So it's been about a year since I put anything out in that series. And I was like, I've got to get into that because I've had that idea rattling around in my head. So yeah, you do kind of, I think, we'll find ways to revisit in some way or a shape or, you know, to get
right.
There.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely not opposed to throwing out some short stories and whatever. It's just, I don't know. I don't want to end up like turning out sort of the equivalent of the Harry Potter epilogue.
Yeah.
You know, where you're just like, oof, man, you should have just dropped that. Not that just sort of put a damper on it. You know, I want to end on a strong note. I feel like I'm kind of moving on just personally. Like, I really love the series. But I started writing it in 2015. And so I published the first one towards the end of October of 2016 and sort of rapid released the first three and got almost no traction until I had book four. It's been the world has changed a lot since October 2016.
Yes, it has.
So I feel like my mind is going in other places, different places. So, you know, I think there's definitely more satire on the way. I have a whole other series that I'm thinking of doing next. So there will be more, but it just feels right, you know, and it's seven books. You gotta go with the number seven for a,
that's a great round like number from an author standpoint. I think, yeah. You know, it's magical, right?
And you know, it's weird. I hear about authors writing, series that are just an even number of books and it makes my skin crawl. Is that just me? Like a 4 or 6 book series? I'm like, no, it's got to be an odd number of books. I don't know why.
I almost did a spit take. I was drinking in between that when you said that. And I was like, that's so funny. That's something my wife would actually say, would be like the odd or evenness of the number would bother her.
Yeah. I don't,
so that's
know
funny.
Why. It just seems unnatural, you know, like, oh, 4. No, you never do 4 in a series. What? It's a trilogy, or you can do 5. You got to have that sort of, and maybe I'm just imagining the sort of series arc overall that peaks at that odd book in the middle. I don't know.
No, that's great. That's great. Now we'll talk about comedy and satire for a little bit, because you mentioned like the pressure was on you to write, you know, make the 7th book, the last book, just hilarious. And, and I know, you know, there are authors out there, that write like rom-coms and stuff. And they put, I know a few of them that put a lot of pressure on themselves to like come up with the comedic sequences. They say it's the hardest thing they have to write. Like, they can come up with the story, but to make the story funny takes it to a whole nother place. Do you find that to be the case?
Yeah. I can talk your ear off about humor and satire. I love talking about it. But basically, if you're writing, it's a little bit different if you're writing, you know, a story that is predominantly another genre, but with humor versus like humor. It's a little bit different. I actually love working with people on rom-coms. I do story consulting for people. And so, you know, I have a few people who do rom-coms and just finding sort of that tension. So for anyone who wants to inject humor into their story, you want to look for the moments of most tension, and that's basically your best bet. Because if you think of it as like the tension is like air within a balloon, you don't have to prick it that hard for it to pop, right? So that's what the humor is going to do. So if you're in a moment of low tension, right, it's kind of between scenes, you're kind of at the trough of your between scenes of high tension, it's going to be harder to get a laugh out of it, right? You may get like a smile out of your reader.
Well, no, it's like I said earlier, my wife and I had trouble not laughing when I made a snarky comment during the sermon, right? I mean, it was that moment of tension. And
exactly. Yeah. Funerals, high potential for comedy. Funerals, church, all these places that are inappropriate because there's so much like tension with the social constraints and what's expected of you. And humor happens when an expectation is subverted.
Yeah.
So in situations where there's more expectations, it's going to be easier to subvert them, and you're going to get a much bigger reaction out of people. Sometimes that reaction will be unpleasant or undesirable, but at the same time, it's more likely to be, you know, people laughing. It kind of can go either way. So when you're cracking jokes, you have to be able to take it when people don't like it at all, because it's worth it to get those other laughs. That's with rom-com. I mean, one of my favorite tropes of all time, and I think I put it in almost all of my series because I love it so much, is when you hear, you know, the character hears something in the other room and they think that maybe someone's being injured or something, and they go to check on them and it's two people getting it on, and it's two unexpected people getting it on. It's my favorite trope. It always produces laughs, and, you know, the chaos of like walking in on someone and just everyone going, oh God, no. It gets me every time, and it's because it builds up that tension, that expectation, like, oh no, I think someone's being murdered. This could be terrible. And then of course it's subverted, and everybody's fine. So.
Yeah. I just love that kind of concept of things. For me, when I write funny things into my books, but it's always these moments that come to me in the middle of writing where I have a character that just all of a sudden I'm like, well, if they do this, it'll be hilarious. But it's, you're right. It's at those moments of tension where I feel like, you know, it's the whole idea of that comic relief, kind of releasing that tension is a relief for the reader, to be able to laugh in some of these moments, especially because my books tend to be a little more serious. And so it helps.
Absolutely. The only thing I wouldn't recommend is adding humor to your climax. That's the only thing where it's like, if you're not a humor book, you're going to undo a lot of what you have spent the entire book building towards. So that one I would say generally, unless you're skilled with it and you can use sort of a gentle hand, stay away from making the climax super hilarious or, you know, using that tension to a comedic effect. But other than that, I think adding those little moments, and especially if you add it before the point of most tension in the scene or right after, you're actually doing your reader a favor, because before you're creating this resilience, right? When people can laugh at tense things, they become more resilient and they thank you for it. And so you kind of are like, all right, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to give you a little joke before we go into battle. And they, you know, they feel a little bit more relaxed going in. And then after, when all the bad stuff's happened, maybe a character people love is killed and everyone's feeling really down, if you can give them a little bit of some dark humor or a joke or something afterwards, it's sort of like comforting them on the, you know, as you bring them down from the catastrophe or whatever, you know. So doing it before or after the point of most tension in a scene is actually a gift that you're kind of giving that reader, saying like, I'm going to take care of you. Like, yes, bad things are going to happen, but as an author to the reader, I'm going to take care of you.
Yeah, I mean, I came up before I was a writer. I was a paramedic and a nurse, and especially among the paramedics, there's just this whole gallows humor, which helps people cope with, you know, horrible situations and things they've seen. And it is almost, especially after the worst of the calls, at some point, and maybe it's a week later, but it becomes a moment where everybody tries to out gallows humor each other. And,
and
it becomes, it's very cathartic, but you know, if someone from the outside were to walk in, they would think we were the most horrible human beings on the face of the earth.
Right. Even though you've just saved someone's life, you've just, you know, added some trauma on the pile. Yeah, no, I totally get it. My husband is a police officer. So the dark humor is, I mean, I love dark humor. I think that it gets us all through some terrible stuff. So I have a series that I write as Brock Bloodworth that is a paranormal police comedy, and it's all dark humor. So yeah,
I'll have to look that one up. I mean, the book here from Brock Bloodworth is Shift Work, the Killhaven Police series. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that is a series that I started writing a little while ago, and I really love it. But another series took off. Well, and I was in the middle of writing book three, so I'm going to get back to it. But it's a paranormal police comedy. So it follows a rookie officer, Norman Green, who starts in book one. He's doing his field training with his FTO officer, Heather Balance, who is a werewolf. So he is a human. They're kind of the lowest caste in this universe. And everyone is kind of like, oh, we're really letting humans police people now. So he has a lot of adversity, and then they kind of go through, and it's basically like a buddy cop sort of thing, except you have leprechaun gangs and You know, the werewolves and the shapeshifters don't get along, and the vampires, you know, aren't allowed within 200 yards of a school, that sort of thing. So it's just a sort of buddy cop comedy. There is a little bit of a conspiracy that starts to take place. And I mean, I get a lot of the stories from, I adapt them from my husband's experience. So it's, you know, it's fun. And I have a free Killhaven police blotter people can sign up for, where they get weekly updates on the crimes from Killhaven. So yeah, it's a fun project I like working on. But, you know, I'm only two books in, so it's not really turning a profit yet.
Yeah. And it's funny how you really need three or four books in a series before people start really reading into it. I've found the same thing to be true.
Yeah. So I'm excited once I get four out, I'll really start, you know, pushing it. But yeah, people like it. It's one of the few series that my dad will read. So
that's great. No, you know, I like the idea of the first responder genre for paranormal and urban fantasy. My first series was about paramedics who treat supernatural creatures. So I completely get the whole idea behind it, because there's a whole host of things that can happen when you find out you live in a world full of, you know, mythical creatures and stuff.
Right. Absolutely. And I think that especially with policing lately, there's just so much, there's a lack of understanding about what goes into it. There's a lot of tension around it. And so for me to write something about that, I wanted to sort of diffuse it. And that is easy enough to do when the people who have problems with each other are, you know, vampires and shapeshifters, rather than, you know, different races or ethnicity, or, you know, like socioeconomic classes and that sort of thing. So by making it paranormal, you can kind of reframe a lot of the tension in a way that's a little bit more palatable for people.
The same thing goes for healthcare.
Yeah. That's not contentious at all.
Yeah. Right. And so, I mean, I do the same thing, and I think it works because it is a fantasy world. And so people can suspend that part of their belief system to enjoy the story. And maybe at the end they get a little something extra out of it. Maybe they don't. I don't, you know, I write from my point of view, and then they have to, you know, they either take it or leave it, but at least they can enjoy the story along the way. You know, Claire, we could probably talk about our books and our stories and how we write and humor all day, but we don't have that much time. And I know the readers want to get out there and find your books. So where's a good place for them to find out what you've been up to and what you've got coming out next?
Well, there's hclairetaylor.com. If you're looking for the Jessica Cray series, it's a great place to get straight to it. But I also run FFS.media. FFS Media is my website, my publishing company, where I host all of the series that I write. So if you want to find Paranormal Police, and I have a cozy mystery series, and then Jessica Christ is also there. It's like F as in Frank. So F, and then S as in Sally.media.
And I love that what you did with the front page there, because you actually have two buttons. I'm a reader, I'm a writer. So because I know you help writers with stories and stuff. So whichever way they want to go, they can click on that and find your books. And you also have a Facebook page, which I will link to in the show notes. Claire, it's been a blast having you on. I know I've meant to have you on the show for almost a year now, or at least 6 months. And so it's good to finally get you here on the program.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, folks. Make sure you catch up with this for a whole lot more from the Fantasy Focus community, both on Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com. You'll find the podcast tab right there at the top of the page. We click on that and it'll show you the most recent episode. Leave a comment there on the episodes that you find them, if you have a question for me or the author I've interviewed, and we'll make sure we get an answer for you right away. There's also a place on the website below each podcast episode post, right there at the top, right below the you know, the audio player, you'll find links to subscribe using your favorite mobile devices, iOS, Android. You can even subscribe by email, but make sure you don't miss an episode. It's really important to, you know, keep up with what's going on, because we've got some amazing authors scheduled. We had, you know, H. Claire Taylor is a great author. We've got Jessica Muller coming up next. I know you won't want to miss that one. But you definitely want to catch up with the episodes as they come along. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook. You can find me there under Jamie Davis Books. Also on my website at jamiedavisbooks.com. And don't forget what I said about joining the Fun Fantasy Readers group. Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers is a Facebook group where we talk about all kinds of fantasy books, and not just mine, but everybody that you're reading. And we get to share our favorite stories and our favorite scenes. And I have my author friends stopping by, and it's a lot of fun. So check it out. Whatever you do, though, make sure you subscribe and come back here for the next podcast, because you don't want to miss anything. And in light of that, I will remind you, as always, while you're out there, walking around, driving around, whatever you do, make sure you keep your eyes open, folks, because there's magic all around you.